Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. As I mentioned last week, this is going to be a best-of show. And in fact, even if I had planned on doing it live, I am sick as could be. So, folks, enjoy this best-of show, and we'll see you all in 2015.
Every show, we begin with the randomly generated political rhetoric from the political rhetoric generator. This week's randomly generated political rhetoric is, unlike myself, my opponent wants an America where socialists and right-wing radio propagandists delicious apple pies. They don't all make sense, but it's kind of entertaining. Anyway, our random correlation for the week, which we do every week to show that correlation is not causation, this first correlation is the per capita consumption of Swiss cheese in the United States from 2007 to 2009 directly correlates with visitors to SeaWorld California. And that's a pretty strong correlation, but obviously not causation, because people eating Swiss cheese does not make people want to go to SeaWorld California, or vice versa, unless SeaWorld California is selling a lot of cheese. Anyway, again, that's to kind of point out the causation. Correlation is not causation, and causation is a much higher bar to reach. Okay, well, we've had the election. And wow, what an election it was. I was out hanging out with the Libertarians on Tuesday night. Had a good time, and good to see a lot of old friends, people I hadn't seen in a while. And so that was kind of cool. We hung out, had a good time. And, we watched the returns come in, and I'll tell you, it was interesting. There were a few surprises and a few things that weren't really a surprise. I guess the big one was the Senate race. And, you know, quite honestly, I wasn't that surprised. I was a little disappointed, obviously, but not necessarily surprised. McConnell won with a ridiculous margin. I believe it was a 15-point margin over Grimes, and I guess that would be something like a 53% margin or something over Patterson. It was a pretty strong win for Senator McConnell, and it's kind of interesting in a state where 60% of Kentuckians don't like approve of Mitch McConnell, 56% of those who voted ended up voting for McConnell. And, it's interesting because McConnell's campaign tactics worked. The day before the election, I was out at an ATM in Newport, Kentucky. I just needed to get some cash, and I was at an ATM. And it was the darndest thing. As I'm walking by, this guy's on his cell phone, and he goes, "Hey, I don't like him either, but, man, we can't have that Grimes woman in there," you know. And I'm like, wow. I mean, this has kind of been the theme. And McConnell's team successfully beat that into everyone's head. McConnell may suck, but she's even worse. Now, they didn't say it that way, of course. They said that, they labeled Grimes as Obama's candidate. And that was enough, obviously, to get people to vote for McConnell, which is really a vote against Grimes. But, that's the way that worked. And, of course, we've already beat the hell out of the media for the the absolute hack job they did on David Patterson, especially the Courier-Journal did an especially bad job. They full series on the Nazi write-in, and in the way that they did it, basically inferred that the third candidate, they never said the third, but inferred the third candidate in the Senate race was a Nazi. And since we were the third person on the ballot, and that was it, right? There were three on the ballot and three that were write-ins. Actually, I believe there was a fourth at the end that were write-ins. It didn't surprise me to see that Libertarians did the worst in Louisville. And it was not like half a percent or, a fraction off. It was significantly worse. The next lowest county, I think, as a percentage, right? And this is all about percentages, double, but it was pretty significant. I mean, it was a very, very significant drop in Jefferson County, counties where, in theory, the Libertarians do better, which are all the counties surrounding Louisville. We also saw that those totals were far and away lower. The counties that Patterson did the best in, of the top four, he had actually worked as a police officer in three of them, which I do believe speaks volumes about Mr. Patterson and his character, that he had worked in those communities and did better in those communities. Far and away, pulled almost double his actual result in those counties. And then the last county he did well in of the top four was mine. So, but, you know, after any election, you do some triage, you do some work to look to see, you know, where did the votes come from, where did they go, that kind of stuff, because you're trying to figure out what happened, right? And so I'm looking at the results comparing 2010 to 2014. And this is a very interesting thing to me, because in 2010, based on votes and turnout, right, Rand Paul versus Jack Conway, which is a different type of race, right? It wasn't McConnell. I mean, the last time McConnell ran an off-year election was 2002, so it's a little bit different now. But what's interesting is that even in 2008, 2010, there were about over 60,000 people who did not vote in the U.S. Senate race. That's a lot of people. In 2014, there were less than 25,000 people who did not vote in the Senate race, of the people who voted statewide, right? And that's based on turnout statistics. So there were, of people who went in and cast a vote statewide, in 2008 and in 2010, over 60,000 people just didn't vote in the U.S. Senate race at all. By contrast, in 2014, less than 25,000 didn't vote. It's just shy of about 40,000 people. The difference, about 40,000 people, a little less. And interestingly, David Patterson obtained 44,240 votes, according to the unofficial result on the Secretary of State's website, or State Board of Elections, excuse me. And I think that's telling. Now, whether those people simply voted for Patterson as a protest or if they actually came out and voted for him, I can tell you that in the waning days of the campaign, the weekend before, his website was getting absolutely lit up, tens of thousands of hits per day, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for a Libertarian candidate who has had basically zero media, a Libertarian candidate who in all of these little county newspapers was often not even listed as being on the ballot. And yes, that happened a lot. People doing research. That was people making decisions. And I think it was interesting to see that despite the media blackout, what Louisville Courier Journal did to us and basically associating us with a Nazi, despite KET changing their criteria, despite many, many programs just pretending like Patterson didn't exist, despite events being canceled, because Patterson and maybe one of the other two were the only two to say yes to the event, despite all of that, despite the concerted effort to keep Patterson out of the media, percent of the vote. Now you might say, well, you know, it's 3%. Why are you so excited? Well, let's see. There were $10 million. No, excuse me. $100 million in theory was spent total by both sides. And we won't know exactly how much it was until about a month from now or so. All this, all the money is being spent in the various races. The reporting stuff is still ongoing. But approximately $100 million was spent in this. And Patterson raised less than $5,000. Part of that was because the party had pilfered some of the money that he could have otherwise raised, because we went to the high donors first that we knew about and worked to get money so we could get ballot access which he had to spend $17,500 on that, not to mention all the in-kind labor and everything else. So, you know, we spent a lot of money, we burned a lot of cycles just getting started. And that was in part the excuse the media gave. Well, you just got started too late. Not really. Whatever, man. What's really disturbing is that McConnell, as I mentioned before, had a 60% negative rating. And Grimes had a 60% negative rating. So 60% of Kentuckians had an unfavorable opinion of both McConnell and Grimes. Yet when we reached out to people, they were full on board with the, well, you know, man, I just got to hold my nose because I don't want the other one to get in, right? And it didn't matter if it was the Grimes people or the McConnell people. Republicans or Democrats, oh, we got to hold our nose to keep her out. We got to hold our nose to keep him out. I like your guy, but he can't win. I have to vote to keep that person out. That, I mean, if I had a nickel for every time I was told that, I'd make a good chunk of change this year. I get really frustrated because there are certain groups who are supposed to know better. And they don't. Because the scare tactics, the fear mongering, it works. And, you know, if you can be corralled by fear into acting against your own interests, then you're part of the problem. You have to be able to take a step back, deep breath, and ask yourself, am I being hoodwinked? Because I'll tell you, what's most disappointing about this race is not necessarily that McConnell won, but that he won so decisively. Folks, we gave him a mandate. Kentucky gave McConnell a mandate. It's a huge, huge win for Mitch McConnell. You know, the political side of me, the side that's only interested in the game, applauds his team. They did a spectacular job of manipulating the media to keep us out. They did a spectacular job of creating a message and beating it into people's heads that someone who is disliked by 60% of Kentuckians, winning with 56% of the vote, a full 15% ahead of his next competitor, is ridiculous. I can't believe the thorough Grimes received. And I've done two other post-election, I did a pre-election and a post-election show here on the network with Ed Springsteen, the owner-operator of the network, on Monday night before the election, Wednesday night after the election. And I'll tell you, I'm amazed. I am amazed. I did not think, I knew that McConnell was going to win. Based on the polling, I knew he was going to win. But I thought it was going to be a 53-45-3 kind of thing or something like that. I knew that was what the polling was. I knew that was what it was going to be. Wow. A mandate. A mandate for someone disliked by Kentucky. And Grimes' campaign, I think it was Fancy Farm in 2013. Payne bus broke down either on the way to or from Fancy Farm. I forget which one. I want to say it was from Fancy Farm in 2013. And I think that's a good analogy for her campaign. It broke down right from the start. They never found a clear message. They never had a clear vision. They never had a clear statement. They kept doing stupid things with the war on women. They kept doing the minimum wage. I mean, they were all over the place. All over the place. You know, team said that Grimes was Obama's candidate, Mitch was Kentucky's candidate, right? That was the tagline there. You know, a tagline like Mitch is the problem, Grimes is the solution may have worked if they had beat that one. Mitch is the problem, Grimes is the solution. That may work. But it just frustrates me because it's amazing. Held their nose. When they wanted to vote for the Libertarian candidate, they held their nose because they really thought this election was going to be close, even though the polls at the end showed that it was not in any way, shape, or form going to be close. And that's the problem. And I'll tell you, the group that I'm most frustrated with, folks over in the Tea Party. The reason I'm frustrated with the folks over in the Tea Party the most is that, in theory, since 2009, early 2009, they've been supposedly looking at politics and supposed to be learning about politics and understanding how this game is played. And part of understanding how the game is played is knowing how to beat the game or to beat it at its own with its own rules. Far and away, so many of the Tea Parties knelt down and kissed the ring. And it's amazing to me. That's all. I can't believe it. It's amazing to me that over five years, into the Tea Party, so many people don't get it. And for that matter, there are left-leaning groups the same deal. You know, at least the left-leaning groups had an excuse in that their candidate didn't really have much of a history, right? So they could at least go on blind faith, right? Well, she's got to be better than him. I mean, wow, he's so bad. I mean, at least they had that excuse. McConnell has 30 years of history, folks, and you think anything's going to be different? There's already a number of stories out talking about how the establishment is basically, the GOP establishment, is spiking the football, saying, yep, we won, because we made sure all the Tea Party people lost. That's why we won, because the Tea Party lost. Oh, yeah. And the next round, I believe, based on the way the language is queuing up, are finally, I mean, I've been calling it for a few years now, but the purges are coming. The get on board with the GOP establishment plan or get off of our bus. Here's now the problem. The Tea Party has shown that they'll knuckle under in fear, corralled using the two-party sham into supporting someone. I mean, understand, where did the Tea Party come from? The Tea Party came as a backlash against the bailouts. And it was Mitch McConnell on TV saying that the bailouts, the debate and the passage of the bailouts, was the Senate's finest moment. So you have a guy who literally was the largest cheerleader on TV for the bailouts, and you guys in the Tea Party, for the most part, there weren't, I mean, obviously not all of them. They're a group of folks, too. They do whatever they want. There's, you know, individuals that do what they want. But as a group, once Matt Bevin lost the primary, as a group, they collectively threw up their hands and said, oh, well, I guess we have to just go vote for McConnell. You know, the guy who is responsible for the stuff of why we even exist. The guy who pushed through the bailouts. I mean, the funniest part is to hear how and why. To hear certain Tea Party folks, you know, explain why they knuckled under. Well, you know, we couldn't let Grimes in. Oh, really? I mean, wow, that's way to be above the fray, guys. Well, you know, McConnell will help Rand Paul win the presidency. Guys, Rand Paul ain't going to be the GOP nominee. It's not. Why? Because you're going to vote for any dork with an R behind his name anyway, so they don't worry about your vote. That's why. You've officially reached the classification of taken for granted. Good job. You're taken for granted now. Signal is there to say otherwise. You just voted for the guy who created the bailout, the things you were supposed to be against. So what difference does it make? I don't know. I hope you enjoy the Jeb Bush as your nominee. I mean, there's other reasons why Rand isn't going to be the nominee. I hate to break them to you, but number one, no one has run for president from Kentucky since, let's see, Henry Clay ran from Kentucky. He lost. He was also, yeah, I mean, that was, what, 1832? Breckinridge. I think his name's John Breckinridge. Breckinridge Road in Louisville is named after him. He ran for president. He was from Kentucky, and he lost. And it was 1852, I think. It was right before the Civil War. And to run for president from Kentucky, the last guy to get the nod, was in the 1850s. And why? Party friends should know this because I beat it over their heads, but they don't listen. And that's what drives me crazy. The Electoral College. The Electoral College means that the most votes Rand Paul or anyone else from the state of, can get from the state of Kentucky is 8. 8 is all you get out of Kentucky. We don't have the population. We don't have the Electoral College vote. Chances are real good it's going to be somebody from a bigger state. If it's if they decide to throw a bone to the Tea Party folks, it'll probably be Ted Cruz. I don't think it will be, but I think Cruz will run deep. I'll tell you who I'm thinking they're going to put up is Scott Walker. That's who I'm starting to really think is actually the one that's probably going to make it. And if he is the nominee, I think he loses to Hillary. But they'll say, well, you know, he's won the governorship 3 elections in 4 years as the governor of a blue state, as a Republican, blah, 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 blah. It'll sound like a good story, you know, a whole lot like Romney, where, you know, he was the governor. the point is, Rand isn't going to run. Rand can't win the nomination because there's only 8 electoral votes in Kentucky. That's what it comes down to. It has nothing to do with anything else. It doesn't even have anything to do with Tea Party establishment, any of that. It doesn't matter. There's a reason that our candidates come from larger states. Because you need that inherent block. You need it. Now, one of the things that's happening, my friends over in LP, Ohio, who were all knocked off the ballot and lost ballot access, because, you know, that race was close for governor in Ohio. It was, what, 64-36? And the boys over there are apparently angling, I think, for a vice presidential nod for John Kasich. Because Ohio is a needed state, according to the GOP math. They need Ohio. And so they are, I think that's probably likely who you're going to get as a VP. I think Kasich makes a strong case for the Republicans. He's not the worst Republican out there, but he's certainly not the best. And, of course, I've got my personal axe, but that's another story. I think you're going to end up with an establishment dweeb at the top of the ticket. I really, really do. I think it's going to be a Jeb Bush. I don't think it'll be New Jersey. Why? Can't remember his name. Terrible. Chris Christie. I don't think it'll be Christie. I don't think it'll be Jeb, actually. Typically, people talked about this early on, aren't the nominees on the Republican side. I do think it's likely that Hillary is the nominee, but even that's up in the air. You know, she's getting older. And demographics, you know, the upside of getting older is that you've got a whole new generation of voters out there. The downside is that you're older, and it's harder to campaign when you're older. So I don't know if Hillary will run or not, but, you know, I think the Democratic Party is probably going to reel it back in just a hair. I don't think they'll get someone who's quite as ideologically radical. And I say ideologically radical because, honestly, I know my Tea Party friends are going to scream bloody murder over this, but as well, but Obama hasn't governed that radically. Sorry. Done some things I really disagree with, too, but, yeah, Republicans do that, too, guys. At some point, we all have to wake up and realize that we're being played here. We are pawns in a chess game when we play the lesser of two evils game. You're letting yourself be played. Why? My Republican friends, my Tea Party friends, I mean, is it the fear of the Red Star? Is that the deal? I don't know about you guys, but if there was no Libertarian Party, Republican Party, Democrat, I don't care about the parties. Parties are a vehicle, but they do provide an avenue, a means to get somewhere, because they are a vehicle. I very much believe in what the Libertarian Party has been doing, but if for some reason I got blacklisted out of the LP, for some reason, I'd still be doing what I'm doing. Because I do what I do because it's the right thing to do. And you guys need to be thinking about that too. All of you in this audience should always be asking the question, is this the right thing to do? Because the moment you're doing something that gives you that queasy feeling in your stomach, the moment you're doing something where you're holding your nose or like, man, I don't want to do this, but I guess I am, you're doing it wrong. You are being made a pawn in someone else's game. Pawns get slaughtered.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Thank you. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
What this new Congress does when they come in, we talked on the network, and I was on a guest on Ed Springsteen's show talking about the XL pipeline, ties into tonight's topic. You know, the pipeline they're trying to put in sounds great, I guess, except for the fact that they're using eminent domain to get a bunch of the land, and that's not so cool. I'm not a big fan of eminent domain being used pretty much ever. I could see some very limited use. You know, the reality is the people whose property they're taking to run this pipeline, it's not like the refineries are going to be like next door. It's not like the traditional uses of eminent domain or the original uses or however you want to put that, where it was, hey, we need to build a road here. And at least you got the benefit of having a road there, even if you didn't like it. Line, it's, hey, we're going to build a pipeline here and you're going to get over it. And oh, by the way, they're not even doing anything with this oil that they're pumping into this thing any closer than about 3,000 miles away. So good luck. I have a real big problem with eminent domain anyway. The idea that my property can be taken by force against my will bothers me greatly. And then to have it for something that it violates the entire premise of eminent domain bothers me even further. Understand, I got into politics again. I had bowed out in 01 or 02, somewhere in there, and I got back in 2005 because of eminent domain abuse, the Kelo decision. So eminent domain has a special little place in my heart. The XL pipeline was a dead issue until suddenly the Democrats were concerned about one runoff election in Louisiana. And I don't know. I just find it ironic, I guess, that suddenly that's a big deal. You know, that pipeline proposal has been sitting on, it's been over, past the House. I think they said this time it was the sixth time it has passed the House, which is kind of ridiculous. And now it's over in the Senate for the sixth time. But this time they say it's going to pass because of the Democrats are trying to save Mary Landry. It's like, really? That's why? Oh. Well, that's a good reason to pass something, because politics, yay. I have a big problem with what they're doing there. It's just crony. The XL pipeline is going to be cronies. It's not like everybody gets a piece of this thing. And this kind of gets to where I was going with the whole show tonight. It's really about cronyism. We're going to talk about net neutrality specifically, but I have the idea that government should be picking winners and losers is horrible. A friend of mine earlier today reached out to me about the Tesla plant that they're putting in Nevada. And make no mistake, I've been a big fan of Tesla Motor Company for years. I've been following their progress. I think the entire thing's kind of cool. But as he rightfully pointed out, you know, the push for tax abatements, incentives, and all that stuff comes at someone else's expense. Billion dollars in incentives and everything else to put that plant there in Nevada. And, wow. My friend said that initially, anyway, that's $200,000 per employee, which that's pretty hardcore. That's a lot. And it's not really dissimilar from what Governor Beshear tried to do back in, what was that, 08, I guess, when he tried to get Harley-Davidson to relocate or put a battery plant here for their electric-powered motorcycles. I had done the math on it, and it was, it's been so long now, but it was something to the effect of, given the amount of taxes generated off the payroll, using average payroll, which they had actually given, right, it was going to create X number of jobs at an average salary of like $45,000 a year. I can't remember the exact numbers anymore. But I did the math all the way out. It was basically going to take 82 years to break even, to hit the return on the investment on that. And that's kind of the funniest part of all about this cronyism, is that it's gotten to the point now where they don't even pretend like they're trying to, you know, do something good. I mean, they do. They're, oh, yeah, well, look at the jobs it's going to create. Yeah, but, dude, the amount of money that you're going to spend out of the economy or taking from other people and giving to them, you could just pay these people to sit at home and it would have been cheaper. Yeah, that's crazy. And those are the kind of crazy, cronyous deals we have going on. It just makes no sense. I mean, just from a pure math perspective, take philosophy away, take all that stuff away, and just do the math. The math doesn't make sense. Because a battery plant has to be retooled about every 5 years. So you're talking, which costs millions and millions and millions of dollars again. So you're talking about basically getting an 82-year lease on something that has a 5-year lifespan. That's insane. Insane. And, I mean, it's gotten to the point now where corporations are just fighting each other for the cronyism. And that's really what it's gotten down to now. The cronyism is actually so out of control that you're just fighting over perks. And in many ways, that's a very good parallel to what we see in today's election. Democrats and Republicans don't represent people. They represent special interests who are trying to get cronyist perks out of the system. It's one set of corporations against another. Whether it's Warren Buffett versus the Koch brothers or whoever, whatever, problem. Yet it's gotten so far out of corporations fighting corporations. Now, we're an afterthought. And I don't know. I get upset with it because they're using our money. And in doing this cronyist garbage, they're the ones who create this too-big-to-fail nightmare to begin with. Do you think banks making bad loans could survive long enough for there to be a giant bubble and then for the whole thing to pop and collapse? Of course not. The very first bank that would go out and do such crazy stuff would be gone in no time flat because you can't sustain bad business practices long enough to become big enough to be able to cause a problem. That is, unless you've artificially capped, when I say capped, kneecapped your competition, when you've artificially made a market that is barrier to entry is so high that no one else can get in, then, hey, no problem. Hey, we got it covered now. And so bad business practices flourish because the system props them up with our money. And then when it collapses, we prop them up again with our money. As one who is a very big believer in the power of the free market, that while not perfect, there is no better system, in my opinion. Because no one person, no one body, no one agency can determine what individuals will want, nor should they have the power to tell individuals what they will get. the free market is the only system people are willing to pay, or it does not provide them products because it's not worth making. It's not of a high enough value to have out there. And so this ties in nicely to the deal with net neutrality. Net neutrality, do not know, is the concept that all data is equal. That's kind of the easy way to say it. All data is, and that is their mantra, all data is equal. And it sounds like a good concept. Hey, all people are equal, right? Yeah, all data is equal, right? Yeah. But the reality is all data isn't equal. It's not all equal. Look, you start from the very beginning, and you ask the question, what is the Internet? Well, it's a series of networks. It's all hooked together. It's a bunch of networks hooked up a bunch of places and stuff. Well, is there ever a time when a network isn't the Internet, right? When is the network not the Internet? All networks are the Internet, or could be, depending on how you define the Internet. Are the pieces of the Internet that are firewalled off from the rest of the network, the rest of the Internet, still part of the Internet? How much of a firewall does there have to be in order for it to not be part of the Internet? The reality is almost every computer in America is in some way hooked up to, if it's in use, is in some way hooked up to a network that is tied to the Internet. So where is the line drawn? What is the Internet? Series of tubes. So you start there. What is the Internet? And there's all kinds of lines to be drawn about what the Internet is and what it means in different classifications of data and connectivity, which is what we're really talking about here. It's not about the data itself. It's the connectivity. It's the bandwidth, the type of Internet that you have, because every network is the Internet. A network that exists in a bubble is useless, provides no value. Hey, look at this mail server I've got that doesn't hook up to anything else, and so I can't get or receive mail unless I send it to myself. That would be dumb. Or, hey, look at the website I created, but nobody can get to it. Nobody would do that. Every computer is on a network that can reach the Internet in some way, shape, or form. So then you have the different types of connections to the Internet. Everybody listening should be very familiar with getting Internet at home, right? Your Internet connection at your home, whatever the speed is a consumer class connection. And there are different service levels, or what we call SLA, service level agreements, around providing different specifications of consumer Internet. But consumer-based Internet, typically what we refer to as oversubscribed, meaning that if you have a 10 megabit connection to the Internet, it's not dedicated 10 megabit. It's the most it's 10 megabit. During busy times, it's going to be much, much slower. In the case of my Internet at home, sometimes it's not above 750 kilobit, which, quite honestly, is making me mad. And that's another story for a different day. But the point is that it is oversubscribed, and you do not have a guarantee of a consistent, always-on 10 megabit connection, although there are some consumer-class connections that do that. You won't usually get that through cable, not on the consumer side. That same exact company often will also sell business class connectivity. Now, business class usually comes with higher guarantees of service. In other words, 10 megabit, yeah, you always get 10 megabit, right? And, hey, if there's a problem, we're going to make sure to get you online first, right? You're going to be in line to get back online first. And some people will say, well, that's not fair, man. That's not fair. Well, understand, you're paying $40 a month for your Internet connection. Business class is paying anywhere from $120 to thousands of dollars, depending on the speed and the whatever, the service level agreement. So, you know, your little $40 connection at home, yeah, if you want to have kick-butt internet service like the business class, sure. Dude, most of them will sell you a business class connection at your home. It's just going to cost you a whole lot more money. So, and part of the reason it costs more money is because the equipment involved in ensuring that your connection is a higher grade of equipment. There's more people that are hired to make sure that the SLAs are met. There's actually more resources going into the business grade, business class internet. That's why it costs more. So the first place to start is, well, if we're going to make all data equal, who loses? That business end up in consumer class, or do consumers end up in business class? Because I can tell you, businesses are not going to like having garbage internet connections that are shared and slow and make their consumers want to pull their hair out. And you are not going to want to pay a business class fee for your internet at home to surf the web. So right away, we've determined that not all data is equal. Business, and there's consumer. Now, let's go back another layer than that. You know, the whole reason we're talking about this, really, at least based on what I can determine, the reason it's come back around, is that Comcast throttled Netflix traffic. Now, Comcast, make no mistake, no love for those guys. They're slime balls. Whatever. No love. Sorry, guys. You work for Comcast, I'm sorry. They're not a very intelligent company. What it is. Then you've got, Netflix, right? And they're sending traffic across the internet, streaming traffic, to a whole bunch of different people, right? And so the traffic is there, and streaming video is a lot of traffic. Now, what Comcast did probably was a little bit extra shady because, you know, they also provide cable content. There is a big fight between the Netflix streaming content people and the traditional content providers. Absolutely grant you that. No problem. But there is a reason to prioritize data on the internet. And this goes back to their claim that all data is equal. No, it's not. Because you know what else runs over the internet? Your phone service. Yes, your phone service, most likely, if it is going long distance, what we used to call long distance, you guys shouldn't really pay for long distance anymore. You know, back when I was a kid, my God, long distance was like $3 a minute. You notice how you don't pay $3 a minute anymore? You can call anybody in America on a cell phone. Notice that? Well, that's because your phone call is probably being routed over the internet. And the cool thing is that's made it so you don't have to pay $3 a minute. But in order to facilitate that, what has happened is the telephone companies have put in massive, massive pipes, big, big, big data connections that essentially carry both, you know, all kinds of traffic. It's not just telephone and you know, web browser. It's all kinds of traffic. Right, they've got all kinds of stuff running over these connections, and that's great. But hey, what happens if a pipe gets a little bit clogged and the phone company needs to get its phone connection through? Should they just make your phone connection all garbly, horrible, and hang up on you? Or should the 10-year-old looking up cat pictures get the same priority as your phone call? Again, getting back to, you know, the rally cry this time around is Netflix versus Comcast. Look, Netflix can get a different provider. There are multiple backbone providers in the country. Granted, that number has dwindled. I grant you that. Ideally, we would have more. But the reality is that Netflix is not locked into Comcast today. They're not locked into Comcast. But, yes, some of their customers would be on Comcast. Well, you know, Comcast, whenever they get into a dispute with one of the local stations, likes to put up something about, well, you know, this local station, they're not playing ball with us. And boy, call your local station and tell them that they need to play ball with us, because otherwise we can't deliver you the content that you want. It's not our fault. Even though most of the time it actually is. Well, not most. Sometimes. Could have done the same thing to Comcast. And how, what sweet justice, sweet poetic justice that would be. Because the reality is Comcast owns a bank of IP addresses, right? It's the numbers behind the names on the internet. Comcast owns a bank of those. And they're easy to determine. So when a customer, a Netflix customer, would turn on and connect to Netflix, Netflix could see, whoops, that's going over Comcast, isn't it? Sure enough, it is. And they'd be able to put up a splash screen that says, hi, consumer. Your internet connection's going across Comcast. And boy, we're really sorry, but Comcast is being a bunch of jerks. And they're throttling your connection, so you're going to get some seriously low-def stuff. It's not our fault. Our stuff's high-def, throttling your internet. If you don't like it, why don't you call Comcast? Here's their phone number. Which, again, sweet poetic justice, is exactly what Comcast does to the local television stations in areas all over the U.S. Which does actually cause the local stations to buckle eventually. At least in part. It plays in. The reality is that if Netflix really wanted to get mean and ugly, they could actually start talking about, hey, look, we actually found some other competitors in the area that aren't throttling your service, and here's who they are. Maybe you might want to switch. Oh, yeah. Because unlike the cable company who gets a protected monopoly, yeah, the internet's not a protected monopoly. There's usually more than one provider in an area, which is a good thing for consumers. You know, I have a feeling that if Netflix started advertising, hey, Comcast is a bunch of jerks, here's the numbers, names and numbers of some companies that aren't a bunch of jerks, you might want to give them a call. Maybe they can give you a better deal. By the way, tell them Netflix sent you. I have a feeling that Comcast would back off their throttling crap real fast. See, there are market ways to solve these problems. And that's a legitimate tactic. Comcast does that down these little mom-and-pop, one-off franchisee television stations all the time. There's nothing wrong with them getting a little dose of their own medicine, and it would be great for consumers. Because here's the thing. Competition still needs to occur. And so there is still the opportunity to switch providers if you want, or for Comcast to come to Jesus, as it were, and see the error of their way. There may be some other compromise that can be worked out. There's lots of things that can happen. But the market should be the one to determine that, not the government. Because the government doesn't solve problems. It doesn't. Any government program, it is always far less efficient than the free market can provide. It is. Now, you could say the market's not fair, it's not this, it's not that, but what's net neutrality really mean? Does it mean that the 10-year-old surfing pictures of cats is the same as Amazon's web service? Or eBay, should they have to have co-equal bandwidth? You're going to miss an auction because some kid was surfing for cats? Or you're going to miss whatever, right? It's slow, whatever, because we had to prioritize some other idiotic service with your experience online? See, the people who are in favor of net neutrality seem to think that, well, once things get clogged, the big companies, they'll have to build more. They'll have to expand the network more. No, they won't. Because the moment you take the profit building the internet, make no mistake, there's in billing these businesses for these dedicated connections. Once you take the profit out of that, they'll stop building it. Companies don't exist to do things out of the goodness of their heart. Companies exist to make money, and they pay people who then put food on their table because these companies want to make money for their shareholders, who in turn take those savings and then retire on them. And the reason I'm pretty passionate about this is because I work in data migration, what I do for a living. My real job is moving data around. And even within each customer, they have different classifications of data. What needs to be instant, no matter what? If I need it, I need it right now. And what needs to be the moment I ask can be a little slower, and what can be really slow? We call that tiering to themselves because of the costs. There's some data that you don't need at your fingertips. Tiered storage is what we used to, or what we do call that. They used to call it information lifecycle management, which is how relevant and how often do you need that data. Regardless, companies themselves, the point is that they do this themselves because they don't want to incur the extra cost of putting less important data on the most expensive storage. Now, one thing I do in moving data around is I help with data center migration. In other words, when a company has data in one location and they want to move it to another, how do we get from point A to point B in a method that is the least disruptive possible? Well, last year, I moved a hospital. Yeah, a hospital. From one data center to another. Several hundred miles. And we had a very small window of time before it would start affecting systems that literally would, you know, put people's lives in jeopardy. So we had a limited window of opportunity and had a small window to get everything done. Is that data more important? The data that, you know, needs to be available in order for people to survive, is that more important than cat pictures? Yeah, that's more important than cat pictures. Unless, of course, you think grandma's staying alive or whoever, whatever the problem, is less important than somebody surfing miscellaneous garbage on the internet. Look, probably 80 to 90% of what's on the internet is just bogus garbage anyway. It's Facebook, it's all that stuff. And the reality is, while social networking is great and all, we could all live without it. We did before, we could do it again. There is actually important stuff that goes across the internet too. And that's why not all data is equal. It's not. At times, people's lives are literally on the line. And whether or not Comcast is throttling Netflix doesn't make a damn bit of difference. Because when it comes to, does someone stay alive or, oh, no, my internet's a little bit slow. I don't have a high-def connection. Yeah, I know what's more important, and so do you.